Welcome everyone to episode 99 of High Tech on the Low. Oren, how are you this morning?
Pretty good.
Awesome. We're glad to hear you, but you know, Oren Marmor here, SVP of Payments at Finastra and CEO of Finastra Israel is here in the building with us. We're going to have a very interesting talk this morning, I think, about the world of fintech and, sure. and payments and what's going on in that world. And as always, we are sponsored by Front Team with its 12 different communities, 6 verticals, and 3,000 members all looking to connect. And as always, if you like what you hear on the show, please like, subscribe, follow, do all those fun things wherever you are. We always appreciate it. So, Oren, you know, today we're going to get into the world, I guess, of finance, fintech. Everyone loves money. Everyone likes payments. Everyone likes transactions, right? We live in a capitalist society, so it's all good.
Absolutely.
What, you know, let's just get right into it, I think, easily enough, which is an easy one here. You know, who are you in terms of Finastra and how'd you get there?
Sure. So Finastra is the third largest fintech or financial services company in the world.
Okay.
Must say, I think that many folks do not necessarily know the name or the brand. I always say that when I was approached with it, I've been with the company for coming close to 2 years now. When
sure.
I was approached, I was not that familiar with the name, but that's mostly as a result of the fact that the company under the current name
sure.
has been around for only 5 years.
It's okay.
a result of multiple mergers and acquisitions and
sure.
so on. About 5 years, several additional companies got merged and the term Finastra
came up.
Used.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Came up.
Nice rebranding.
We basically, to put it in a very simple manner, we provide mission critical software and solutions to banks
okay.
around the world with pretty much everything a bank needs with the exception of credit cards.
Amazing.
So the only area we do not deal with for historical reasons are credit cards, you know, the
right.
The software behind that, but we do everything from universal banking, treasury and capital markets, lending, corporate lending, consumer lending, and payments.
Amazing.
What I deal with.
So when you also talk about mission critical, first of all, when you said those words, I just immediately assumed kind of like a Houston level like operations room, and it's just seeing, you know, transactions go down. But obviously, that's not what you mean. But like, you know, what is mission critical?
Look,
in that sense?
Mission critical is a solution
mm-hmm.
or, you know, software solution in this case that absolutely needs to run flawlessly.
Okay.
If it goes down, you have significant ramifications that to some extent you can have significant financial impact.
Okay.
So when think of a payment system, think of, you know, we're all relying on payment systems, right? To make
day-to-day
actions.
Right. Of course.
Day. If this goes down for a few minutes, you know, maybe we can handle it. If this would go down now for 8 hours,
uh-huh.
10 hours or 12 hours,
what happens?
It will hit frontline news, right?
Okay.
It will have a significant financial impact. You know, the analogy I like to draw, when it happens, luckily only once every few minutes.
Right.
But if the mobile network goes down, right?
Or right.
WhatsApp goes down for a few hours, we all feel the impact.
100%.
I think that in the, when you look at the financial services space, because it's so heavily regulated, and this is truly payments, for example, is what drives the economy. If this goes down for an extended period of time, the economy could halt.
Wow.
So
do you feel like you're kind of like dealing with that type of level of intensity?
We're definitely dealing with that kind of level of intensity. I will tell you that, for example, without naming names, but you know, if you look at the banking industry in the U.S.
Sure.
these days, which is pretty sensitive, by the way.
Yeah, some volatility, you could
yeah,
say.
All the banks that went under recently are customers of ours because we're
wow.
you know, we're deployed with most of the banks.
Right. That doesn't mean anything about Finastra.
No,
right,
nothing you know? To do. But one of the banks that sort of had a bit of a sensitive situation at some point overnight, it was overnight in Israel, but it was past business hours
sure.
in the U.S.
Okay.
They made a configuration change to the system. The system crashed. It took them several hours to bring the system back up, and they were scared as hell.
Really?
What would happen if they have to open up business hours or business days
and not have anything?
And not have it. Now,
right.
think of it. When you look at a lot of the banks, and we saw that with, I think it was with Silicon Valley Bank,
right.
that
SVP.
A bad tweet or statement from the CEO could lead consumers to just withdraw the
right.
funds.
Right, and lose confidence.
Now, think of what happens if the bank opens up a business day.
Okay.
Someone tries to make a transaction or
right.
withdraw money. They get refused or it gets delayed. they tweet in and they say, okay, they're holding us back, and it could be something nothing to do with the bank.
100%. Because,
and from there on, you can have, you know, a snowball effect that no one wants. So
I was going to say, it's the domino effect of the banking industry at that point.
You know? And another figure, and I think I mentioned this to you when we chatted a bit, when we take our global footprint,
right,
which is many of the largest banks in the U.S. and Europe and Asia and so on, we process across globally, across our systems, $23 trillion a day.
$23 trillion a day.
A day. Now, the global GDP, which is an annual figure,
okay,
is roughly $30 trillion. So we process roughly 80% of the equivalent of the global GDP a day.
That's crazy.
That sort of shows that now obviously this is spread across multiple customers and multiple countries and so on. But you can understand that if a customer such as some of the largest banks, Citi, HSBC, Barclays, or so on, if their system goes down, a lot of consumers, businesses, enterprises, as well as possibly governments could be impacted. And that's obviously we want to.
Right. And like one of the things too that I think, you know, is very interesting then that what you're talking about is that, like, you're kind of in a sense supporting these financial systems at a certain degree. Now, also, you know, I'd love to understand your take on the system, because a lot of people here, you know, especially in recent days with things like SVB and other things going under, you know, they look at it as saying, okay, traditional banking is, I wouldn't say dead, but maybe on the way out, dying, has some things that definitely need to change for it to be anything of worth in the future. Right. What's your real take on that?
So I think it's obviously much more of the latter.
Right.
A change is required.
Okay.
And I always say there's no stopping innovation.
Okay.
Innovation is change. Look at every aspect of our daily life, right? The way we consume data and news and entertainment is completely different. There's no way of stopping this.
Right.
On the other hand, it's very clear that banks are not dead. They will probably never be dead.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? If there's fintech is a broad term.
Okay.
So you know, if we go back to how I define Finastra, I mentioned that we're the third largest fintech or financial services company.
Right.
I think financial services is a bit more accurate. Fintech, you know, every startup, garage startup,
with a SaaS or
does
something
with a certain type of payment,
right,
you can define them as fintech. I think it's great, and we need that level of innovation. On the other hand, I think if there's something that the recent volatility in the market has proven,
mm-hmm,
and definitely, you know, also volatility around crypto and Bitcoin and so on
yeah,
is that you need a regulated environment. Think of SVB,
okay,
and the other banks,
yes,
Silvergate,
right,
and FRB and other banks that a Signature Bank that went under. What would have happened if there was no regulator in place, regulator, and there was no protection for consumers and so
on? Probably 2008 type level is what we're looking at.
And when we look at also, innovation is great and crypto is great.
Right.
We all know that much of the use around Bitcoin is not necessarily
great. Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And
okay,
we do want to have some level of compliance and money laundering,
right,
control and so on. So I think that banks will never go away.
Okay.
There was, by the way, not my invention. Bill Gates had an amazing quote years ago that the world needs banking services. It doesn't necessarily need banks.
Okay.
So the banking services themselves and having a regulatory framework is a need that will always be there.
But the institution of the bank.
Institution.
Being
how uh-huh. is this being done? Is something that will probably evolve. Now, I've been in the financial services space for about, you know, 2 years. Most of my career was in the telecom space,
mm-hmm,
which is, by the way, going through almost the same evolution and trends and so on. In the telecom space, we used to call the evolution of how do you avoid a telco becoming a fat pipe.
Okay.
Or sometimes we even call it a fat, dumb pipe.
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, it's about connectivity.
Sure.
Like I say, you know, I'm lucky to have a fiber connection at home. I couldn't care less who provides that.
You just need it to work.
Yeah, I need
there
it
you
to
go.
Work. I need it to be cost effective.
Mm-hmm.
And the value would be the services I consume over that.
And so you're seeing the same type of thing
we're
with banking.
Seeing a very similar trend. I remember when I joined Finastra, even before I joined, you know, I started reading some reports.
Sure.
It was an amazing report I read called FinTech 2030.
Okay.
I was trying to sort of forecast how will the industry look at 10 years from now. By the way, the term fintech, I did not know it until then, was started to be used only after the subprime 2008 crisis.
Makes sense.
So,
right.
So that's when people started using the term of fintech. So now we're sort of in the second decade and sort of
another iteration.
Another iteration. And there was an extremely interesting survey in there of what would be the role of banks
okay.
in 2030. And as always, you sort of get a wide range of answers and responses, but most of them are noise. And
sure.
then it was almost 50-50 split in between two responses, which
okay.
I call the threat and the opportunity. The threat is, and I liked it very much because they're very much related to what I've seen in the telecom space, that banks will become fat pipes. And
okay,
and
fat dumb pipes, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
That consumers will basically use only to consume basic regulatory services, but they will look elsewhere to get value-added services and innovation and advanced applications and so on.
So kind of like we'll go to the bank to use some services, but we're really coming to Finastra.
You'll go to the bank to manage an account, uh-huh. maybe make basic payments.
Right.
You'll use everything else.
Okay.
But whenever you want innovation or, you know, advanced payments or, you know, cheaper options to do
right.
cross-border payments and so on, you'll go elsewhere. So that's the threat.
Okay.
The opportunity is, when you think of it, the bank has two tremendous assets. It controls the regulatory framework,
right.
which is not something that is cheap or easy to get to.
And you also need it. We yeah. don't want to be back in subprime.
We see this in Israel. Look
right.
at 1-0, which is the only new bank that was established here probably in the last,
sure.
I don't know, 30, 40 years. It took them a long time and probably a pretty painful process
yeah.
to get that license to get it up and running. And they hold the customer base, because at the end of the day, definitely in developed countries, most consumers and definitely most businesses or all businesses have a bank. So
mm-hmm.
so the starting point is that everyone has a certain relationship with a bank. So banks also hold the consumers and the customers. It's not as if you're addressing a customer base that doesn't have banking services altogether.
Gotcha.
So when you take that's a tremendous starting point to become the platform of choice. And therefore, the other response was that banks would actually become platforms that will allow customers to not only consume the basic services, but to consume a multitude of advanced applications and services. And when you think of it, and I consider myself not only a pretty tech-savvy guy, but I'm also an early adopter. I like
okay.
to try new things. If you can consume a bundled service from your key provider that gives you the choice and all the innovation, it's usually much easier rather than start consuming from 10 different, you know, parties or applications
right.
and so on. And then if something doesn't work, you know, who do you point, you know?
You don't have the finger to point at,
yeah,
right?
Whose throat do you choke? So,
but it's funny because in a certain sense, you're saying that the banks will never lose that point of contact with the consumer that you guys are in a sense are trying to support, right?
Right.
Because they're always going to be there as like, I'm going to come to you. I'm not coming to Finastra. I'm going to go to Bank A,
right.
who's dealing with Finastra and can give me all sorts of other things going on there. Right. So
I'm assuming that will be the case now. But
assumptions here,
no,
right?
But
okay.
It will definitely be the case for some basic, you know, for account management and maybe basic regulatory services. For other, let's look at cross-border payments.
I was going to say like Venmo between friends.
Yeah, but let's look at, first of all, here in Israel, you're right.
Right.
Look at Bit and Paybox.
Right.
Most people use that.
Right.
It actually, they don't, it goes across, you know.
Yeah, we don't have to get into
it's controlled right. by some of the banks
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
so on. But in other countries, that's not necessarily the case. But let's look at the different options. You know, I'm going on vacation this summer to Europe. And
okay.
And some places, you know, when you order, you know, at Zimmer in Austria, for example.
Right.
Most of them do not work with credit cards.
Okay.
They tell you, you know, you need to pay me a deposit, transfer the money.
Okay.
Now, if I go into my bank account, I want to transfer 200, 300 euros
right.
to Austria, they will kill me in terms of
right, you'll be paying an arm and a leg
and commissions
right.
and so on. So there are services such as Wise.
Right.
It took me 5 minutes to install the app, 2 more minutes to make the payment, and then it was like a year and a half of commission, nothing.
Oh wow, nothing.
So now that is something that is an example of over the top, because the bank sees nothing of that. But if now the banks can be smart enough to integrate all those services into their ecosystem and offer their consumers choice. Look, you can make a cross-border transaction through Swift,
mm-hmm.
through Wise, or through Visa, or through MasterCard.
Right, or through Venmo, God knows, right? Venmo. You know, who knows?
Then they, in many cases, that will probably prevent consumers from going and doing it directly, because it's easier for them to do it through, to avoid installing another app, to do it through their known interface, to have better control, maybe
sure.
better security, to have customer service and so on. And it's true that the bank might see less profit from that,
right.
but they're still seeing something. And I think that's the concept of a platform or an ecosystem. By the way, Amazon on their platform, right? They have their own products. Mm-hmm. They have products from other third-party vendors 100%. Because it's all about leveraging the platform and getting something through the economy of scale.
And do you think that you, like you being Finastra, right? Like you guys are going to try to support that kind of move in the future, or are you just kind of like waiting to see where the market kind of falls?
We're very proactive about it. It's an integral part of our strategy. So I've mentioned the four pillars we have within the company, mm-hmm. which are payments, universal banking, treasury and capital markets, and lending.
Okay.
We also have a strategic initiative, which we call banking as a service.
Okay.
And banking as a service, to a large extent, is very much sort of taking
the financial service
about the platform, right. And taking it to the next level.
Okay.
And the assumption is, again, that the banks hold a critical asset, which is the regulatory environment, mm-hmm. the banking license. Now, they can and they will continue forever to offer services directly to their consumers.
Mm-hmm.
But there may be other market segments that they can either not reach directly or other players will compete with them, mm-hmm. regardless.
Right.
So rather than, this is a classic example, if you can't beat them, join them.
I was going to say.
So, I was given, let's say you're a big supermarket.
Okay.
Right? Here in Israel, Rami Levy,
right.
with the phone companies, right?
Okay,
and
right.
It's not because he thought he would be an expert in telecom, because he realized that he can leverage his store presence, right, and his consumer base and so on to sell those services as well. Now, let's say IKEA, right?
Right.
Or a bigger Carrefour. Right,
right, you know, right. Or Decathlon or whatever.
Whoever. Let's say they want to start offering some banking services. It mm-hmm. could be loans. It could be certain payment types and so on.
And beyond just like a rewards program,
exactly.
Talking
beyond
about. Like the actual rewards, services.
Actual banking services.
Okay.
Of different types. Now, for them to go and to do what 1-0 did,
right.
and to apply for a banking license makes no sense.
Right.
Right. But if they can tap into a banking license to one of the banks, if the banks can now expose their infrastructure and their mission-critical system,
right,
which
right.
is where we started from, and expose it in a way that other companies can consume, right, and wrap different services around that, that could be a win-win situation because basically now banks can provide or sell services and grow their business not only directly through consumers and enterprises, but through other channels.
Mm.
And it provides those other companies, you know, whether it's supermarkets or furniture companies or whatever, to upsell additional services. And that's what we call, you know, banking as a service. So it's
right.
really how do you open up your banking environment in a way that others can consume that as well. And it sort of creates a new value chain where if in the past you had only banks,
right.
customers, now you have banks, right? You have distributors,
right.
you have consumers.
Well, it kind of gives the access to banking services beyond just the banks, right? It says like I can, you know, theoretically tomorrow I could open up a store, that store could grow customers, exactly. and within 2 years I could start offering banking services of exactly. some sort, right? Exactly. Now, do you see that as kind of being the next, you know, wave of fintech development, this kind of what I would argue is some democratization of the financial services and something like that?
Absolutely. And if you remember, I also mentioned a few minutes ago that there is no stopping innovation. At the end of the
right.
day, I don't think that banks definitely understand that they cannot do everything on their own.
Okay.
And even when I look at ourselves at Finastra, we would rather focus on our core competence.
Okay.
What we do best
right.
is develop these, let's say in the payment space, this mission critical payments hub and engine
right.
and deal with all the regulatory framework and so on. If, for example, I want to offer an advanced AML, anti-money laundering, or fraud or compliance, or new payments type, that's not my core competence. So rather than try to develop that on our own,
sure.
we can tap into an ecosystem, right, of innovation out there.
Right, the fintech ecosystem,
exactly.
right?
This is where we've developed also a platform,
okay.
a cloud platform, where we allow
nice.
Different companies, including startups and small companies that have no chance of selling directly into banks because just, to, you know, the
right, the threshold, I was going to say, is too high.
So high right. And they're...
red tape, everything.
They will be
yeah.
killed along the way
100%.
In terms of... compliance and legal, right,
right.
And procurement and support and so on. We allow them to onboard themselves onto our platform.
Mm-hmm.
We go through a certain certification and testing process, and then we can offer that. First of all, that immediately becomes available to our entire customer base.
Mm-hmm.
But it also allows us to be much more competitive and attractive because when I go and
right.
pitch our solution the customers, right, that do not have my platform.
Sure.
If I can show them, look, it's not just the payments, which, you know, we have.
Which is unlocked and we're great. Yeah, exactly.
And so on. But at the end of the day, I have competition that has similar things,
right?
So, you know, I have certain advantages and
of course,
unique value.
Just like any business and any space. Right.
But if I can show them that I can allow them to tap into that entire sort of ecosystem, that provides
and get more value at a huge level, it sounds like. Okay, interesting. Now, I want to also kind of bring you back a little bit because you had mentioned this very, you know, interesting thing about the whole world of crypto, right?
Right.
And you had said also that there's this, you know, kind of what's the world going on there, regulations, all that stuff. Now, where does Finastra kind of come into the play here with crypto? Because at a certain sense, it's almost like doing everything that, you know, everyone would have wanted to have done, right? It democratizes the whole process, makes it easy, no banks involved. So like, where do you guys come in on that?
So we're not directly related to that. And by the way, the crypto that is non-bank related is probably, you know,
not your thing.
Right. Not our thing at all. But when you look at crypto, let's differentiate between crypto as, you know, a speculative coin.
Sure.
You know,
yeah, we're not talking about the shit coins in a sense, right? Yeah, exactly.
The actual blockchain technology.
Right.
Now, when you look at it, there are quite a few governments around the world, even here in Israel, Bank of Israel started a deal with it, which are developing what they call CBDC,
right.
Central Bank Digital Currency.
Which we've talked about even on the show a little bit. Yeah.
So this is the understanding that you do need to offer the ability to make digital payment,
right,
and having them being secure and so on,
right.
But you want to do this still with what we call a stable coin,
right,
or fiat currency. So you don't invent a new currency; it's still your national currency, just leveraging that technology. And that is something that we did start looking at. And there's no doubt that once CBDCs become adopted, that needs to be supported in the payment system as well,
right?
You need to be able to provide that level of service. I will tell you that we started looking at very carefully, and I think that with the recent volatility, that is probably not the top priority. What's amazing, for example, is that in the U.S., I think the U.S. is the number one country in the world in terms of the number, the percentage of
users,
consumers that have crypto assets.
Okay.
Right?
Makes sense.
They don't have any banking services for those. So basically, if you own crypto, you cannot hold crypto in your bank account.
Right, you have to hold it yourself.
You have to hold it yourself, and you have to go through a third-party provider to convert it to dollars back and forth.
Okay.
Obviously, there's a lot of not only inefficiency.
And you're losing money along the way.
So I think that over time, we'll probably see, and we started looking at it. By the way, we had some discussions with another customers of ours, that a bank called Silvergate.
Okay.
That shut down about a month and a half ago.
Right.
They were overly exposed to crypto.
To the whole system.
But in principle, forward-looking, I think that it would definitely make sense for banks to offer the ability to have what we call a custodian wallet.
Okay.
So you can actually hold crypto in your bank account and make transactions that are crypto. Let's say if you have crypto and I have crypto and you want to make a payment from your account to my account, we could do it in crypto if I can manage your balance rather than have to convert it to dollars, make the payment, and then convert it back.
Interesting.
So that's probably an angle we will see as coming up as a requirement.
And seeing how you guys kind of get into that market space.
Exactly.
Now, you know, one of the other things I want to hear from your end, and maybe this is not so big in the fintech space, though I've heard it differently for different people, is, you know, obviously the great surge of AI right now, right? You know, what's going on with that? How is it impacting the way we have processes and just do life in general?
Right.
Are you guys, you know, bullish on it? Are you guys using it? Do you guys think it's going to be adopted heavily in fintech services, in Finastra?
I think, first of all, it's probably all of the above. I think we're...
Great, easy answer.
Yeah, I definitely see the need for it. We're definitely in that space. Probably not bullish enough. And I think that in general, this market is still in early stages.
100%.
Let's go back to the figure I've mentioned of $23 trillion annual. Now, think of it, again, that's a global figure, but even if you take a specific bank, the volume of daily payments is off the charts.
Yeah, it's off the charts. It doesn't matter
now,
who you are.
The amount of information you gather through all these payments is tremendous. So what I can, you know, that payments engine has, even if it's anonymized, I mean, within the bank, it's not anonymized, but even just looking at trends of understanding who makes payments to whom, what are typical volumes and so on, there are a lot of actionable insights you can gain from that. And I think that this is something that the world is only now starting to comprehend. We're constantly working, and we have a data team and some data scientists and so on that are trying to figure out what AI capabilities can you offer. Traditionally, the focus was much more around regulatory archiving and reporting and so on, and making sure that you can understand at any given point in time,
like what's going on in
on and so on. But we want to take it to the next level.
Okay.
In general, the entire payments market went through a significant revolution that started in actually March.
Okay.
2 months ago.
Of this year.
Of this year.
Okay.
Which is a new standard called ISO 20022.
Okay.
Don't name that.
Okay.
In principle, again, in a nutshell, it's converting the global standard of payments messages from a legacy format to a modernized XML format that can carry more information.
Sure.
So basically, rather than just have a payments that says, okay, I'm X dollars from account A to account B, there are now fields and there's much more information you can add in there into source of payment and what's the use and so on. Now, I think that, again, the market is still very nascent
in
terms of leveraging that data.
But like, how could you use AI to like source that data?
My vision is that when you analyze all that data, a bank should be able to convert those into actionable insights.
Right.
So for example, proactively approach customers saying, you know what? We see based on the volume of payment, if we give you this level of credit, or if we give you this service, you can optimize your business forward. Or further. And I think that we're definitely going to get there. As always, the challenge is not in collecting the data. It's how do you make a meaningful analysis that makes sense.
That you can then use in your business, right? You know?
So I think that that's why I said all of the above. The need is definitely there. We're still in very, very early stages of actual adoption and meaningful usage of that.
But it's interesting to see that like you guys are at least looking at it and seeing it as a real, you know, player and something that could change the game. Now, you know, we're getting towards the end of the discussion today. So I want to ask you, you know, obviously from a perspective of, you know, it's both someone who's kind of switched industries, gone in from telecom to banking and so on and so forth. You know, I kind of want to know from your perspective, what do you think is the real opportunity now for entrepreneurs getting into the fintech space? You know, someone who's, let's say, building their startup right now or wants to do something like that, where do you think the real opportunities are?
I think, again, it's a pretty broad question, but
of course,
tying this to what I've discussed earlier around backing as a service in the platform, I think that if you can find a real pain point, that the financial industry, and the financial industry is still predominantly based on banks, but it could be from the banking angle or it could be from the enterprise angle. If there's a real pain point that you believe you have a solution for and you can build it in a generic way that other platforms could consume, then you probably have a pretty promising go-to-market angle. I think that...
So don't sleep on the banks, basically.
Don't sleep on the banks. But on the other hand, I think that if there's something of... The recent volatility, the economic downturn, the reduced investment in tech globally now, it shows that, you know, and we've seen the cycles in the past, but it's much harder for smaller companies to have a direct go-to-market angle. And this is where the power of platform is critical. And there are so many large players out there that on the one hand have the platforms that are already integrated within the largest players in the market. But on the other hand, that are constantly looking for innovation. And innovation, we realize that as much as we run internal hackathons and we drive for innovation, most of the innovation will come from external partners and from our ecosystem. And this is where we're focused on, and I'm sure other large software or solution vendors are focused on as well.
100%. Well, listen, Oren, it's been very fascinating talking to you about the kind of whole world of finance, fintech, and where it's going right now. I really appreciate you coming on and looking forward to see what Finastra does.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.